we're holding on Kof Nun Ches Amud Bez, fourth line from the bottom. The last couple of Mishnayos have been dealing with various cases where we have a suffix who is going to inherit because we have a suffix of whom among two close relatives died first. So we had previously where a father and son died in the same collapse of a house. And again, we said it doesn't have to mean that scenario of a collapse of a house. Of course, it just means any case where we don't know, where we have no way of knowing which one of them died first. So we had that. We had the cases where it was him and his wife. And there's an argument about what happens to the various nechosim that came from her and the various nechosim that should go to her, such as the ksuba. You had the last Mishnah, the earlier on this Amud, the Mishnah about him and his mother. So now the Gemara brings a piece which relates to all of this, but actually, eventually we're going to relate it back to one of these Mishnayos. It actually relates back to the Mishnah previously about the father and the son, about the father and the son having died, and we don't know which one is first, which both Rashbam and Tosfos point out. But that being the case, really this next piece of Gemara from here all the way until the middle of Kof Nun Ches Amud Beis really should belong on that Mishnah. There's no reason it should have been left all the way till here after we dealt with all the other cases, why we should be returning to that now. But that's how we have it in front of us in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Shochu Mitan. They sent a message from there, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, Ben Shalova B'nichse Ovir B'chaye Oviv. If a father borrowed money for using the nechosim of his father while his father was alive. So in other words, he borrowed money and created a shibud on the property before he actually inherited it while his father was still alive. And then his father dies. Bnoi motzi miyad alakuchos. Then his son, the very one who borrowed the money, is able to take away the property from the buyers, meaning that the property that his father or he himself sold. Now that doesn't seem to be very logical, and the Gemara is going to ask on that and show that that's mistaken, and then we have a mistaken statement over here, and we need to fix it up and then figure out what they were actually saying. So first, so the Gemara right away, and they also added with this letter, Vizui Shekosha B'dinei Mamonos. This is a very difficult halacha in Dinei Mamonos. There doesn't seem to be any logic behind it. So the Gemara asks, before we even get to the logic of it, what's the scenario? Lova, my mapik, if he borrowed money, what is there that he'd be taking away from them anyway? What do you mean? He borrowed money from them because of that. Therefore, if he or his father sold them any property, then he has a right to take it away. That is one thing. Never mind. In other words, when we say Zurisha Kosha B'dinim Mominus is an expression meaning, in other words, there's a din over here. It's a valid din, but it's very difficult to understand on what basis the Chachamim said it. But this isn't even a din. This seems to be completely illogical. why would he be taking away from them anything because he borrowed money? Where do the lakuchas come in? Where do the buyers come in? Now, many of the Rishonim don't have those four words for od lakuchas mayavinte because essentially it's the same question again. Why is he taking away from lakuchas? Rabbeinu Gershom actually has a bit of a different gusa in the question in the original statement. The question is basically, where do we even find any lakuchas in this connection anyhow? We're saying that he borrowed money. There's no indication, Bechlal, that he or his father sold anything. So where are we even bringing in lakuchas in the first place? So no. Ela I itmar hochi itmar. Rather, if it was said, it was said as follows. What they actually sent mitam from Eretz Yisrael was as follows. Tosfos actually doesn't have the girsa I itmar hochi itmar because that would imply that what they sent was that this is not the words that they sent, but rather they sent different words. And no, Tosfos is going to end up saying that actually the Gemara is going to go through several possibilities of what exactly was the din they sent. So Tosfos says actually what it's going to be is that all of them, they sent a letter from Eretz Yisrael containing a whole bunch of halachas, which we're going to discuss on this Amud. And the question is, on which one are they saying Zuri Shekosha B'dinei Mamonos? So therefore, instead of I itmar, hochi itmar, which implies let's replace what we said before with what we're going to say now, Tosfos prefers to have the girsa eat kasher, talk kasher. If you're going to say that it's difficult, among all these dinim that they said, the following is the one that's difficult to understand. So the scenario rather would be as follows. Ben Shemocha B'nichse Ovid B'chaye Ovid, a son sold, so not he borrowed money, a son sold property that of his father while his father was alive. This son being somebody who is eventually going to yarshin that property, so we have three generations over here that Ashbam explains over here. So we're talking about, let's say, so you have, there's Yaakov, you have Yaakov, he has a son Reuven, who in turn has a son Chanoch. So now what happens is Reuven had sold some property while Yaakov was alive. Now the expectation would have been that Yaakov is going to die and Reuven will take over those nechosim, and eventually, years later, when Reuven dies, then Chanoch will take over. Meanwhile, what happened was that Reuven died while Yaakov was alive. So now what they're sending from Eretz Yisrael is that that Chanoch, the son of Reuven, would have Bnei Motzim Yad Alakuchos. So again, Ben Shemocha B'nichse Ovid B'chaye Ovid. So again, the son, meaning Reuven, who sold the property of his father Yaakov while Yaakov was alive, Umes, and then Reuven died and Yaakov is still alive. Bnei, his son, Chanoch, Motzim Yad Alakuchos, is able to take away that property from the buyers. Because in other words, he would say that he has the right to yarshin that property. The Zuri Shakosha, the Dinim Mominus, and that would be what they're saying, that this is a difficult din in Dinim Mominus to understand. What's the logic? Because after all, Le Mrule, why shouldn't the buyers be able to tell him, Avrucha Mizabin Ba'at Mapik, your father sold it to us, and you should have the right to take it away? After all, you don't yarshin anything that your father sold. So here, Chanoch, you're arguing that this property would have been something that eventually your father would have yarshin, but therefore you're saying you should have the right to take it away from us. But nevertheless, the fact is your father did yarshin it. So your father did sell it. So why should you be in a position to yarshin it? So, in fact, the Rashbam point, the Rashbam mentions in this connection, it's the reason why you could say that he's taken away from the Lakuchas is because it's Roy, it's not something that exists in Reuven's possession yet, and therefore Reuven shouldn't have the ability to sell it, but nevertheless, the Lakuchas should be able to argue back. The fact is he did sell it, and therefore why should you be taking it away from us and not even reimbursing us for it or anything? How is it technically
possible that you can sell somebody else's property that you don't own yourself? I mean, what are we talking about here? It's not a yachting issue, it's a selling issue.
Right. Well, that's what we're dealing with over here. In other words, it is Roy. It's something that eventually Reuven is going to yarshin if Yaakov dies before him, as is to be expected. But nevertheless, that's the question. That's the question. So the fact is he did sell it. He did get money for it. Here, Chanoch, the son of Reuven, is saying, I'm going to take that away without even reimbursing you. So why should he be entitled to do that? Now, yes, Tosfos has a long discussion over here that what are we talking about? Exactly, you can't be makna dava shaloi bala, you can't be makna dava shaloi bala olam, and over here, the fact is his father is still very much alive, and it's not dava shaloi olam in his possession. So yeah, Tosfos discusses some possibilities over here. One thing is we can say, yeah, the sale is surely not a valid sale, but the question is, the question really is that they paid money. They should therefore have a shibud because of that money. And when what they're saying over here is that the lakuchas do not have that shibud. But then Tosfos goes on and continues to discuss it, and then Tosfos says we're talking about a case that we learned in the previous perek, where the father had written a document giving his son these nechosim mehayom ul'achamisa. So he had said that as of now you're going to be able to have the peiros, the guf I'm going to keep as long as I'm alive, and here. Uh, And here he went and sold it, which we talked about over there. What happens if he sells it? What happens in terms of the father getting it back when his son dies, etc.? So now we have a similar din in this connection. What happens in terms of the son of, what happens in terms of Reuven has a son? Does he have the rights to exercise his Yerusha on it now that his father died and then afterwards his grandfather died and he remains the Yerush?
It's obviously fraud. I mean, how would you inherit fraud?
That's what we have to figure out over here. So the Gemara asks to my kusha. On the contrary, though, you could ask, why is it so hard to understand? Maybe Chanoch should be able to say, you know what? I am coming with the koyach of my grandfather. Meaning, in other words, I'm not yarshining directly from my father. I'm yarshining directly from my grandfather. B'nei bonim harem kabonim. So what did Reuven do over here? Again, either we're talking about over here reimbursing the buyers. We tell them basically, in other words, that you should have done your due diligence and realize that you're buying something that Reuven doesn't have yet. We shouldn't be on the hook because of that. Or as Tosfos had continued to say, we're talking about where Reuven did have a certain ownership of it, but only as far as the payrus, not as far as the goof. So the Gemara is saying, not only does it actually become easier to understand the relevant halacha, but actually to understand the scenario, in other words, but we can even say to understand. Not only that, but also we can even understand the rationale behind it because the son, Chanoch, is able to say that, I'm not yarshining through my, it's not that it had to go from Yaakov to Reuven to me, but rather it goes directly from Yaakov to me, because after all, Reuven died before Yaakov, Reuven, my father, died before Yaakov, and B'nei Bonim Harem Kabonim. And that is in fact so, as we've learned in the previous parak. Never mind issues of sales like this, if Reuven had died before Yaakov, then yes, Chanoch would directly yarshin from Yaakov. In fact, Teda, the Gemara says, in fact, you can show that you have a pasuk. The pasuk says, in the place of your fathers will be your children, where also seemingly the pasuk is talking about a three-generation chain like that, that your children will take over in place of your father. You'll set them up as princes throughout the land. The context is talking about, it's a song in honor of a king. In particular, it says in the caption of the capital in the Oyo Yosef Yitzchak that the whole capital was addressed to Mashiach. The point being, in other words, that yes, we do see that there is this concept of the grandson stepping in to take over from their grandfathers. So yes, we could well say then that the Lekuchos have taken their chances buying something that they shouldn't have, realizing that Reuven doesn't have ownership, or at least not full ownership of it, and therefore Chanoch should have every right to take it back from them and say that it's part of my Yerusha. So the Gemara continues, Ela Ikasha Hokasha. Rather, if you want to say there's a difficulty, then you have the following difficulty, namely, this is another din that they sent in the letter from Eretz Yisrael. Ben Bechor Shemocha Chelek Bechor Abachaya Aviv. When you have a Bechor who sold the portion of the Bechorda while his father was alive, so the same scenario as we just had, but the twist is that Reuven is a Bechor, and he's eventually going to inherit a double portion. So he sells that ahead of time, Umeth B'chaye Oviv, and Reuven dies when Yaakov, his father, is alive, B'noi Motzi B'yana L'Kochus, so again, his son Chanoch will be able to take away that Chelek Bechorda from the Lekuchus. Because again, Chanoch is going to inherit it. Chanoch is in line to inherit it, even if, just like we had with Benoist Slavchad, for example, where we said that Slavchad was supposed to get a double portion and then ended up going to his daughters. So the same way, the double portion that Reuven is supposed to be getting is going to end up going to his son Chanoch. And they would have said on that, we would say that the statement that they said there, the Zurisha Kosha, the Dine Momenus, would refer to that one. Because again, you can ask, Avur Mazvin Iomatik, why should it be that his father sold it and he, Chanoch, should be able to take it away? Again, shouldn't he? He's only getting it from the koyach of his father. And again, the Gemara answers back, and b'chitema, if you're going to answer hochanami omer mekayach avur de'aba kasina, here also you might, Chanoich might make the same argument as before and say that I'm not coming from the koyach of my father Reuven, but rather my grandfather Yaakov. Yaakov asked, the chelik b'chora, my avidte. What do you mean? He doesn't get his own chelik b'chora. Chanoich himself is not a b'chor. The fact that he's getting a chelik, fine. The fact that he's getting a portion of Yaakov's nechosim, that you could say he doesn't have to go through Reuven, it goes directly from Yaakov to him. But the chelik b'chora, by definition, only a b'chor gets it, and only in this scenario, only Reuven is a b'chor, Chanoich is not. So therefore, if we're talking about Chanoich laying claim to a double portion, he can only do that through Reuven, and Reuven himself sold that. So on the face of it, it would be very difficult to understand, and that would explain then why in that letter from Eretz Yisrael they said Zuri Shakosha Vidinim Mominus. But the Gemara answers back, my kusha. Still, why is that so hard to understand? Duma Motzi Omar, still, Chanoich can say to the buyers, Mikoyach Avur Da'aba Kasina, yes, I am coming from the Koyach of my father's father, and Ubim Koim Av Kamina, and in fact, I am standing in the place of my father, meaning, in other words, I am in the situation as if I was Reuven, And as Reuven, I would be entitled to get that double portion. But after all, yes, Reuven sold it to you, but that's not our concern. Basically, as Xeris Hakotzev is as if we're taking Reuven's place. So he did something he wasn't supposed to. Fine, but that shouldn't impinge on me. So maybe it's not so difficult to understand that din after all. Again, we would have to say that, look, you know, we're buying property. You have to exercise your due diligence and make sure that you're not buying something that the guy is selling a dover shaloi bala olam or making a shibud on a dover shaloi bala olam or whatever, according to the whole discussion in Tosfos over there. An interesting side point in that is, still, are we saying ultimately that Chanoich gets it because he yaushens the schus that Reuven would have had, and therefore he yaushens that instead, or is it that literally he takes over as though he were Reuven itself, as though he were Reuven himself? Rabbi Chanan Wasserman points out an interesting nafkamina in it. What happens, for example, you have like this. Imagine, for example, the poskim talk about if a yid shmadzich Rahman al-Atzlan, then wherever possible, the chachamim will take away the yerusha from him. The chachamim will act as though the beis din of that generation will act as though that person doesn't even exist, and we're not going to give him a yerusha because he did badly and then became a mummer and became a mashumud. Now what would happen though, if he has children who are good frum Jews, are they going to get it? Well, then it depends on how we look at it, whether we look at it that they're taking the place of Reuven or whether they're getting through the schus of Reuven. If they're getting through the schus of Reuven, he forfeited his, therefore it's forfeited to them too. If not, if we say that he is literally taking over as though he were Reuven, well, Reuven himself has done wrong by being a mummer, but his children have not, so therefore they would get it. Similarly over here, we could argue that Reuven did wrong by selling something that he shouldn't, but nevertheless, that shouldn't, and even when it comes to the Chelik B'chorah, that shouldn't necessarily prevent Chanoich from getting it. So the Gemara says, Ela Ikasha Hokasha. Rather, if you want to say that there's something difficult among these dinim that they sent from Eretz Yisrael, then the following one would be different. Then the following one would be difficult. Not something with Yerusha, but another din. In other words, apparently they sent a letter over here containing a number of dinim, as Tosfos says, and one they said at the end, Zuri Shekosha, and we have to figure out which is the one that's kosha. So, Ela Ikasha Hokasha. If you're going to say among them, one of them is difficult to understand, then it would be as follows. They sent in this letter, Hoya Yedela Edus Bishtar Adshle Nasa Gazlan. Suppose, for example, that Reuven signed as a shtar, signed as an aid in a shtar before he became a Gazlan, where at which point he's still Koshal Edus. The Nasa Gazlan, after the loan was taken out and the shtar was written, Reuven became a Gazlan. So now you can have a case later on where Shimon needs to bring the shtar to Beis Din, and now Gazlan is postulatus, of course. But now later on, Later on, Shimon needs to bring the shtar to Beis Din for kiyum. He needs to have it certified that these are, in fact, the signatures of the Edim. Now, Reuben, being a Gazlan, is not going to be able to give such edus. So, who ain't a meid oksav yodei? So, Reuben cannot testify about his handwriting because he might have forged it or something. Avol acherim meidin, but other people can say edus on his behalf. So, other people can come and say, yes, we recognize that this is Reuben's signature. So now the question is, that would be very difficult to understand. Hashta iulei meheiman. Look, you're not believing him. Achrini meheimni. What would be the logic that other people should be believed? After all, if the whole point is he's a Gazlan and we have to suspect that he might have, for example, signed it falsely today. So what do you mean? Okay, they recognize it's Reuben's signature. The whole point is he may have forged it after the fact. So therefore, you could say, Vizuisha Kosha, but Dine Mominus, you could say that this is something that's difficult to understand in Dine Mominus. But the Gemara answers back, my Kosha, why? It's not so hard to understand. You can say that we're talking about that it means that it was already certified by Beis Din before he became a Gazlan. So all it is, in other words, so you have, the Shtar already has on it what's called a henpik, which is the official certification that the Dayanim write on it, that say we three Dayanim saw this Shtar, and we certify that the signatures on it are valid based on the Eidos that we heard, or whatever it is. And at that point, even Reuben himself could have been one of the people who comes to Beis Din and testifies that this is his signature. That's one of the five ways of Kiyum Shtaris, is for the Eidim themselves to come and testify. So now, all it is we're saying that. So we're saying that later on we have the acherim meidim means the dayanim themselves are certifying that these are our signatures on the henpik, and that in fact and that means that back then we said that the shtar was valid. So it doesn't mean, in other words, we're going to have Edom come after the fact and say, we recognize this as Reuben's signature. It means that the Dayanim themselves, who signed on the henpik, are going to say, yes, these are our signatures. And in turn, that means when the shtar was first brought to us, back when Reuben was still kosher, then then Reuben himself came and told us that this was his signature. And at that point, he had a cheskas kashrus, like every other yid, and therefore we accepted his aegis. So not so hard to understand, the Gemara says. Ela'i kasha ho'kasha. Rather, you're going to say, what's difficult to understand? That's actually according to the Rashbam that we're talking about, that there's a henpik involved. Tosfos points out why. The Re points out in Tosfos, after all, the Dayanim themselves may not know whether the person was a Gazlan at the time. The Dayanim, after all, they have Edim coming in front of them and saying that, yes, this is the person's signature. They don't necessarily know whether Reuven is a Ganav or not at the time. So rather, Tosfos explains that no, what it means is would be, in other words, that they have his signature on file from beforehand. So they have the Beis Din has seen his signature before he became a Gazlan. So now you have Beis Din has a chazaka and they already saw the shtar, so therefore that's fine. So the Gemara says, Eli Ikasha Hokasha. Rather, you're going to say what's difficult among the dinim that they sent from Eretz Yisrael is the following din. Suppose that Reuven is signed as an aid on a shtar that has to do with a relative of his. So it's not a close enough relative for him to be possible aidus, but it's a close enough relative where conceivably there could eventually be eventually there can be Yerusha involved over here. So Hoyo Yidela Edus Bashtar. So if he knew Edus of his in a shtar that this person borrowed money. So an example would be, let's say that Reuven is signing on a shtar that Yishmael borrowed money. Yishmael is Reuven in real life. Yishmael would be Reuven's great uncle. And so in that case, he's kosher to write a shtar on his behalf. So actually, tipoloi birusha. So now you could have eventually where the nechosim of Yishmael end up in Reuven's hands, because as we learned in the previous perek, the whole all the dinim of Yerusha over there. If Yishmael himself has no children of his own, then the Yerusha goes to his brother Yitzchak, and then from there eventually it comes down to Reuven. So actually, tipoloi birusha. So if Reuven signed this shtar before he yarshin those nechassim, because eventually when he yarshins, he's going to be yarshining this shtar as well. So hu eni yochol l'kayim ksav yodei, so he can't certify his own signature in Beis Din, because then he'd be saying edus on himself. But other edim can come and certify that this is his signature, and you would say, Zurisha Kosha, but Dini Mominus, what's the logic? The fact is that it's negair, he's very much negair bedover. We're talking about a shtar that he himself is writing and that he himself it has a signature on it. Maybe again, maybe he wrote it today. So what good would it do to have edim on it? Okay, to have other edim. And the answer is, the Gemara says, still, same thing. My kosher, Gilma Hochanamik and Shuch Sav Yodu Beis Din. Same thing, we could say that Beis Din has seen his signature before. Well, according to the Rashbam, that they did a hen pick, and according to Tosfos, just that they've seen it before. In any case, so the same thing. It's not really so difficult to understand. Ela ikasha hokasha. Rather, if we're going to say what's difficult is the following din, they continued in this letter. Suppose that Reuven knew Eidos and wrote it in a shtar and then signed on a shtar of Shimon before he became Shimon's son-in-law. The Nasa Chasona, and later on he becomes Shimon's, and later on he marries Shimon's daughter, so now he's posel Eidos. So again, who ain't a made up sabyode? So Reuven himself cannot say Eidos on his handwriting, because he's possible to give Eidos, being a close relative, in a few weeks from now, we'll be learning this in the Masechta Sanhedrin, Rest Hashem. But other people can say the Eidos. So you could ask the same thing. You're telling me he himself wouldn't be believed, and we have to be concerned that he himself might have forged the shtar at a later date or something, and we should trust other people? What's the logic? So you're going to answer, okay, well, here also you're talking about that you already have his signature on file in Beis Din. This particular din works even if Beis Din has not previously certified his signature. So in other words, it's not even a matter of it's just gzeres hakosuv that a son-in-law is not believed, or any other close relatives. So it's not even that we suspect him of forging. So that's the Gemara answers back. Well, my kusha. So why is it so hard to understand? Dilma, gzeras melechi. Maybe you could say exactly that. Here, unlike with the case of the Gazlan before, it's not a matter of that we're afraid that he may have forged it. It's just a gzeras akosov that relatives can't give edus. De'ilei temahochi, if you were going to say otherwise, what about Moshe v'Aaron l'choisnam? What about would Moshe be able to give edus on behalf of his father-in-law Yisrael, or Aaron to his father-in-law? No, of course not. But it's not because Mishum Beloi Mehemni, who you're going to say it's because they're not there. We don't trust them. Of course not. Of course we trust them. El Gzeras Melachu, it's Gzeras Akosav, and that's that. The lawyer Edu Lahem, that they're not going to give Edus on their behalf. It has nothing to do with whether we know them to be personally trustworthy or not. So the same way over here. Hachanami, so the same thing over here. You can say very simple. Gzeras Melachu, Shalai Yod, Aksav Yod, Lachosnei. That it would be a Gzeras Akosav that he can't give the Eidos on behalf of his father-in-law. But nevertheless, he himself is not possible. He didn't do anything wrong. He's not a Gazlan or anything like that. So therefore, yes. So he himself can't certify his signature, but somebody else could most certainly do it on his behalf. So that's not so hard to understand. Okay. Well, so far then we've gone through five or six halachas, and each one of them the Gemara has shown how, even though they wrote in the letter Bezuri Shakosha Bedini Mominus, they're really not that hard to understand when you think into it. So the Gemara says,
That's what we said earlier, that it's fraud, this last scenario.
No, one second. The first scenario is...
No, the last scenario.
No, the last scenario involving the relative, we're saying there's no fraud at all. All we're saying is it's Xeris HaKosuv, that he being a son-in-law is not able to testify on behalf of his father-in-law. But we're not concerned that he wrote something fraudulently. Again, even if it was Moshe, even if one of the signers on the shtar was Moshe and it was signing that Yisrael had borrowed money, we wouldn't trust such a thing, not because we don't trust Moshe, but because Xeris HaKosuv. So it's not so hard to understand why there was somebody else could come and testify that this is Moshe's signature. So now, Ela la'olam kedamrin me'ikra. So we're going to go back to what we said at the top of the Amud, that the case that we find difficult is the one where Reuven had sold property that he was going to inherit, that he was in line to inherit from his father Yaakov, and now Reuven dies, and then afterwards Yaakov dies, and Chanoich is, and we said that Chanoich is able, that Chanoich, Reuven's son, is able to take it away from the Lekuchas. Again, either we're talking about, as Tosfos had talked about, that the sale is definitely not a sale, but the question is about reimbursing their money, or that we're talking about that, that the father had in fact partially sold it to Reuven ahead of time, namely he had sold him the Peiros but not the Guf, as we learned in the previous Perek about that scenario. In any case, so we're going to say that after all, that's the one where even though the halacha is a halacha, nevertheless we can say it's difficult to understand. So you're going to ask what about that pasuk that we brought before, your sons will stand in place of your father, from which we learned that Chanoich has the right to Yarshin directly from Yaakov at bypassing Reuven. The answer is very simple. Ahu v'bracha. See, that pasuk is saying a bracha that tzaddikim will have children and grandchildren to Yarshin them. That's why, in fact, the pasuk continues. She's saying with the sarim, b'chol ha'aretz, you will make them noblemen throughout the land, meaning that they will be noble tamid chachamim and leaders. So we're not talking about the halacha. We're talking about a bracha that's being given to a tzaddik, and ultimately to Melech HaMashiach. There's no din that we're learning from that. So it's difficult to understand. You don't have a pasuk that says it has to be that way. You have a bracha. So therefore, the question would be, after all, why does Chanoich get to exercise that right, and to say basically, I'm bypassing Reuven and inheriting directly from Yaakov, and therefore the fact that Reuven sold to you is not our problem. So it's hard to understand why he should have that right. But the Gemara asks back, Omimotis amit b'bracha ksiv, what do you mean that's only a bracha and you're not meant to learn a din from it? Avol inyan din aloi. How can you say that you don't actually learn a din from it? We can say that we can't learn the din from that pasuk, fine, but at least we can certainly find such a din in another context. And that's where we bring in the Mishnah before on Kuf Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, which is again, given that this discussion is going to end up, given that this discussion now is ending up bringing that Mishnah, is why the Rashbam and Tosfos said really this whole discussion should have belonged 2 blocks ago when we learned on Kuf Nun Zayin Amud Aleph. We learned that Mishnah after the Gemara had gone through the whole discussion over there about the ikni, where a person says, I'm gonna acquire an achasim in the future, I want this to be part of the shibud. Does that work or not? After that would have been the more logical place for this entire piece over here with the Shulchan Mitah. Anyway, so v'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, really actually it's a Mishnah, so v'hatanan, we learned it in a Mishnah, on Kufn and Zayin Amun Aleph. Nafal abayis olaval aviv, if a house collapsed on a person and his father, so in this case on Reuven and his father Yaakov, olaval merishav, or Reuven and somebody else who Reuven was in line to inherit from, so just like we said before, for example, that Reuven could conceivably inherit from Yishmael, if Yishmael died childless, and then the Nechasim went then to his brother Yitzchak, and then from Yitzchak to Yaakov, and from Yaakov to Reuven, in this particular case, that wouldn't work, because if Reuven's father, Yaakov, is alive, then he gets it first, actually, so, the point is that there's somebody whom Reuven could be yaushening from directly, not having to go through Yaakov. Anyway, v'hoisa olav ksubas isha o bal choiv. We said Reuven owed his wife a ksuba payment, or he owed a bal choiv a payment for a loan. And now Yoshe Av Omrim have ben Mesrishin v'achakach Mesahav. So now the Yoshim of the father Yaakov want to argue that the son died first, Reuben died first, and then the father, so therefore Reuben never inherited it, and instead we get the nechosim from Yaakov, and therefore the fact that there was a ksuba to be paid and a choiv to be paid is not our concern. The Baal Choiv, or the wife, says that the father died first and then Reuben inherited it, and then in turn we should be getting it, because we have our shibud now. And again, this would have to, now this does go with the piece that we learned before on Kufnun Zion about Di'ikni. That would, all of that would require us to say that there was in the shtar Di'ikni, that he's saying anything that I acquire in the future will be part of this shibud, and that in fact Di'ikni works, which was the whole point that we had the whole long sugya about on Daf Kufnun Zion, and Aleph and Amadeus, whether it works. First we had said maybe it doesn't work and the Mishnah would be only according to the mayor. Then in the end we said it would work even according to the Chachamim. In any case, so that's the scenario. So then we said in the Mishnah what we do in that case. We had a Machlokas B'Shammai B'Shillel in that case, whether B'Shammai had said Yachloiku and B'Shillel had said Nechosim B'Cheskosa, and that we go according to the Chazaka of we go according to the Chazaka. The Yoshe Ha'av are definitely Yarshining one way or the other, and the Baal Choiv is only a Sofer. So now, if we consider that Mishnah, says the Gemara, my lav, Yoshe Av, means bunny. When we said the Yoshim of the father who are coming with their claim over here, that means the children of Reuven. So the scenario is, in other words, again, that Yaakov and Reuven have both died. We don't know which is first. And it's Reuven's sons, Chanoich and so forth, who are coming to argue that we should get the Nechosim and that you, Baal Choiv, should not. Umayrishav, and when we say the scenario where Reuven and one of his Mayrishav, somebody who he could inherit from, would be Achi, would be brothers of his, so in other words, Reuven and a brother of his, Shimon, let's say, died in the same house collapse. If you're going to tell me that Chanoich, the son of Reuven, does not have the ability to say, I'm coming directly from Yaakov, I'm not Yarshining through Reuven, but rather directly from Yaakov, and you would argue, as we just said before in the Gemara, that the positive is only a bracha and not meant to teach us a din. So then we have to ask, what's the claim over here? The Chanoich and his brothers, the sons of Reuben, are claiming, again, we're assuming they were the Yoshe Ha'av in this connection. They're claiming that Reuben died first and then Yaakov, and therefore they're saying that we didn't inherit from Reuben, we inherited from Yaakov, therefore you, Baal Choiv, have no right to it. Why? If we say, Tachas Avesecha Yuvanecha, if we don't say that, rather, so what happens? Ki Mesa Ben V'Achakach Mesa Ad Ma'ihavi. Who cares if Reuben died first or Yaakov dies first? Either way, Neimelahu Baal Choiv, Yerusha Savua and Koshakona. Either way, the Baal Choiv should have every right to say, I'm taking the Yerusha of your father, because since we don't apply Tachas Avesecha Yuvanecha, then the only reason you, Chanoich, are in line to inherit is only because of your father, Reuven. So fine, in this case, Reuven died before Yaakov. Who cares? The fact is that it goes through Reuven, so when Yaakov dies, Reuven inherits it, so to speak, because he's already dead, but he is in line to inherit it, and then in turn it goes to you, Chanoich, and therefore I have a shibud on it. So why are we saying that halacha is very difficult to understand? And we said zuri shakosha v'dinei mominus, when we see we have a clear Mishnah that states that din. And the answer is loy. No, not necessarily. We're not talking about Chanoich being involved at all. If he was, then yes, the Baal Choiv would have such a, then maybe the Baal Choiv would have such a claim. Rather, Yoshe Ha'av Echov, when we say the Yoshe Ha'av, the Yoshim of Yaakov, who are coming with their claim and saying that Reuven died first, means Echov, means Reuven's brothers. So obviously they're not Yarshining through Reuven, they're Yarshining directly from Yaakov. So therefore they're saying, if Reuven died first, then he never inherited any part of the property. It was all in Yaakov's possession when he died. Well now, we remaining brothers, Shimon and Levi and so forth, are going to inherit. And then Reuven and Reuven won't get anything, and therefore Reuven's Balei Choiv are not going to get anything. We're not responsible to pay his debts. Merishav means Achei Dabur. And when we talk about a case where Reuven died in the house collapsed together with Merishav, that would be, for example, his father's brother. So in this case, that would be Esav, for example. So the argument is, did Reuven die before Esav, and therefore Esav's other children or relatives or whatever are going to claim that they get it, whereas the Baal Choiv argues that Esav died first and then Reuven. So there's really no proof from the Mishnah one way or the other for this din. That we're saying that we should be able to say that Chanoich inherits from Yaakov bypassing Reuven to the extent that we should be able to say that he would be able to take away from the Lekuchas. That is why they said Zui Shekosha b'dinim Mamonos. This is a very difficult din in dinim Mamonos to understand, because what is the source of it? Nevertheless, the Rashbam explains that even so, we didn't find a source for it. In the end, we said we can't prove it from our Mishnah, because the Yorshim and the Merishim that we're talking about in our Mishnah are not necessarily, neither one of them is necessarily Reuven's sons. Nonetheless, the halacha is like that. We didn't find anything to slug it up either. So, in fact, the Rashbam says everything that we said on Omer Aleph, every single thing that we said that was in that letter, all of them, the halacha is like them. So that, and the halacha about the chelik b'chora the same way, and the halacha about where he wrote a signature and a shtar and then later on became a gazlan, that he can't testify in his own signature, but other people could, provided that huchsak sav yodeh b'beistin, that his signature has been certified on file with beistin, and all the other cases that we talked about on Amud Aleph, all of them, the halacha is in fact like them, because all of them are things that the chachamim of Eretz Yisrael held of these dinim, and they wrote them in a letter to Bavel. All they were saying about one of them, and now we've established which one that is it's very difficult to find what a source for that is. But nevertheless, the din is still a din. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Bominei Menef Sheshes. So now here's a question that relates more directly here is from one of the previous Mishnayos. So now the last Mishnah on Kufnut Ches Amud Beis mentioned the case where it's a son and a mother that both died, and we don't know which one is which. So now this next piece of Gemara is going to deal with that. So this next piece of Gemara.
What's the halacha before we switch?
The halacha is like is all of these things that were sent in that letter. The halacha is like them. So in the case where Reuven sold property that he was in line to inherit from Yaakov, then later on when Reuven dies first, and then Yaakov after him, then Chanoich is able to take it away from the Lekuchas. Again, subject to what we said before within Tosfos, whether we mean just that the sale itself is not a valid sale, and we're just talking about reimbursing their money, or whether we're talking about that, only when Yaakov had partially sold the property to Reuven previously by selling him only the payers. So yeah, the halacha in the end would be like that, that Chanoich does have that right. Now, we said we can't prove it from our Mishnah, and you can't prove it from the pasuk Tachas Avesecha Yuvanecha, because that's only a bracha. Nonetheless, the din is still a din.
The Lekuchas have their money back or not?
So no, we're saying they're not entitled to their money back, because basically they took their chance buying something they shouldn't, and Chanoich is able to tell them that I'm not on the hook to refund that to you yet. Yeah. Okay. So let's go on. Bomine Merev Sheshes. Ben Maushi Yirashis Og as Imei Betever. Suppose that, let's say you have a case involving inheriting from the mother. Suppose that, for example, you have a mother, Rachel, and her son, Yosef. What would happen, for example, if Yosef, now normally Yosef would be in line to inherit from his mother, from his mother, Rachel. So what happens? Yosef dies while Rachel was still alive. Do we say, would we say that we consider he yarshins from her, so to speak, in the grave, meaning in other words, the nachla still passes through him, lahancha la'achan min ha'av, where in turn then it will go to his brothers from his father's side. So for example, if, so now, in other words, if So if Rachel had died first and Yosef inherited her property, and Yosef himself did not have children, there's no question that it would go to his brothers from his father's side. So therefore, it would go to Reuben and Shimon and the rest of them. But here we're talking about the twist is that Yosef died first. We're also talking about, though, that the Rambam and other Rishonim point out, actually, if Yosef had children, then there's no question, yes, then the Nachla would go from his mother to them, and it wouldn't be going to his brothers. The question is, where Yosef has no children, and it's going to his brothers from another mother, would that work or not? So Rav Sheshes Tinisua. So Rav Sheshes says you can answer it from a Braisa. So now actually the Braisa that the Gemara is going to quote, the Gemara is also going to end up saying there's a mistake in this Braisa and we have to correct it. Now eventually the Gemara is going to bring on Mishnah, but the question is, so Tosfos wonders why Bechlal does even bring the Braisa first, and the answer is because we first want to fix up the Braisa. Once we should try wherever possible to make sure that Braisa is correct. So therefore he chose to deal with that first, so that we can end up correcting it, and then we're going to show that the din is actually implied in our Mishnah as well. So, a Braisa says, Ma'av shen nishba, if a father was taken captive, and he died someplace wherever he was taken, Ubnes b'noi b'medina, meanwhile his son died here in the same country, so this is similar to this case of Nofel Abayis, again, we don't know which one of them died first, or the same thing the other way around, Ubden shen nishba mes av b'medina, or the other way around, the son was captured, the father were died here in the city. Either way, Yosha Ab or Yosha Ben Yachloiku. So then, either the Yoshim of the father and the Yoshim of the son split the Nechasim between them, says the Braisa. That's because we don't know which one of them died first, and therefore we have a suffix of who gets it. Now, so Rav Sheshes says, Hei Chidomi, what's the scenario? Ilema Kedikatoni, if you're talking about, if you're just going to take the Braisa at face value, Hey ninhu Yosha Ab, the Hey ninhu Yosha Ben. Then what do you mean? Who are the Yoshim of the father versus the son? Either way, it's the same people. If the father has no other sons, and the son also has no sons, then either way, the father's relatives are yarshining both of them. And if the son has yoshim, then they're yarshining from both. So what is the case over here where there would be an argument in the first place who's getting what? Evidently then, says Rav Sheshes, you have to fix up the Braisa and say what it means is as follows. Av Shenishba, the father was taken captive, Umes Ben Bitoi Bamadina. It's not his son, it's his daughter's son who died here in the city, Uben Bitoi Shenishba Umes Avi'ime Bamadina, or vice versa. Where the grandson was taken captive and the grandfather, the mother's father, died in the city. We don't know which one of them died first. And now you have a big difference between who Yarshin's won, between who Yarshin's what, because after all, you have the Yoshim of the son are different than the Yoshim of the father. The Yoshim of the grandson would be his father's relatives, not his grandfather's relatives. So then we would say Yoshab Av Yoshab Ben Yachloiku. Then we would say that they divide it because neither one is more muchzik than the other one. So, in fact, the Mishnah before on Kufnun Chesam Adays had a machloikus about what happens where the Tanakhama had said Yachloiku and Rabbi Akiva had said Nechosin B'chaskosin, and Ben Azai complained to Rabbi Akiva, why are you doing that? So here, our Braisa over here apparently would go according to the Chachamim. Anyway, so fine. So Rav Sheshes says, so now if we understand the Braisa that way, the Im Issa, if you're going to tell me that in your case that you were asking about where Yosef dies before Rachel, then the question is whether he yarshins from Rachel and can then pass on the Nechosim or after he's dead already to his brothers, then consider Nihinami to Ben Mesveresha, even if you're going to say that the grandson died first, so what? Still, he would yarshin his mother's father after after he's dead already, and then in turn he would transfer that nechasim to his brothers from his father. And therefore, again, it wouldn't matter. There wouldn't be any argument who died first. The whole point that we're saying that there's an argument who ends up yarchening him because who died first, that presupposes that the grandson, if he died first, is not inheriting from his grandfather, from his mother's father. Well, there you go then, says Rav Sheshe. So you see that it doesn't work for him to yarchen bakever after he's already dead. So therefore, that would show from that b'risa that the son does not inherit from his mother after he's already dead, after the son is already dead, to then bequeath it to his half brothers. It doesn't work that way. So therefore, in our case, they asked Rav Sheshes, if Yosef dies before Rachel, the result is that he never yarshened anything from her. Therefore, when Rachel herself dies, then the Yerusha is going to whoever else is available to inherit her. If she has any other sons, then they inherit, obviously. And if not, then it's going to go back to her brothers and her father and the rest of that. Okay. So now Rav Acha Baman Yumi points out to Abaya, Afanan Nami Tanena. In fact, we don't even need the Braisa for that. Again, as Tosfos had said, the only reason that Rav Sheshes had brought the Braisa in the first place was because since he realized that the Braisa has a mistake in it, then he wanted to grab the opportunity to correct it. But now, anyway, Rav Acha Baman Yumi points out to Abaya, really, we actually have our Mishnah itself implies this point. Again, the Mishnah had said Nafal Abayis Olaval Imay, that a house collapsed on a person and his mother, and we don't know which one died first. Elu ve'elu modim shiachloku, both Bishamai and Bishillel, who disagreed in the previous couple of Mishnayos, what happens to the Nechasim. Here they both agree that yachloku, because in the earlier Mishnayos you had one has more of a chazaka, one set of claimants has more of a chazaka than the other, and therefore Bishillel has a reason to say that you follow that chazaka, but here, neither one is more muchzik in it than the other. Whereas Rabbi Akiva had said that even in that case, Rabbi Akiva had said that in that case, Nechosim b'chazkasan, and Ben Azai complained to him and said, we have enough trouble already with the ones that Bishamai and Bishillel argued about, and here you finally have one where the other Chachamim say that Bishamai and Bishillel agree, and you're coming and telling us they disagree. Anyway, the point is that Rav Acha says, the Im Issa, if you're going to tell me if it were possible for Yosef to inherit from his mother after he died, and then in turn that the point of that would be that then his brothers from his father's side, Reuven and Shimon and so forth, inherit, so then it's the same thing you'd say in the Mishnah. Nehi nami de ben mesperesha, even if in the scenario of the Mishnah, Yosef, the son, died first, still we would say that he yarshens from his mother in the grave, and then in turn his brothers from his father's side would yarshen, and then there would be no argument about whether he died first or his mother died first, because either way it would be going to the same yarshen. So you see from our Mishnah, so it doesn't work that way, and therefore when the argument is, did Yosef die first or did Rachel die first, that's going to make a big difference. If Rachel died first, then Yosef inherits it. And then in turn, when Yosef dies and he has no children of his own, then it goes to his brothers from his father's side. As opposed to if Yosef died first, then we would say that Rachel's inheritance instead goes back to her birth family, back to her father and brothers and so forth. So the Gemara says, "The time am I? Taka, what's the reason behind that? Why don't we say that the son yarshens from his mother after he died?" Amar Abaya. So Abaya says, because we can learn like this: Nemra siba beben, but nemra siba babal. The Pasuk mentions the point, which we discussed extensively in the previous parak, that the Pasuk makes a point of that you don't want Nachla to be transferred from one Shevet to another, which in the previous parak, a couple of months back, we were learning all the details about that. Therefore, you have the original din that women who inherit property can marry only within their shevet, and we discussed over there about the whole concept of the husband yarshening and then whether it's daraisa or darabanan and so forth. So you have twice in the psukim it mentions that you don't want nachla to be transferred. Twice it says v'lo sisev nachla, and the Gemara had explained over there one of them is referring to a sevas nachla through the husband, meaning if a woman marries a man from another shevet. And he yarshins her, then it's going to come out through that the Nachla has been transferred to a different Sheva. And then you have the other one was in connection with the sons, where we said that if her husband dies before her and or divorces her or whatever, and then her sons yarshin her, her sons are also going to be from another Sheva. So therefore, so we learn from that. Just like when it comes to the husband, when it comes to the nachla going from one shevet to another through the husband, the husband doesn't yarshin from his wife if he's already dead. So the same thing. The same thing when it comes to the son. Also, so the same thing. It doesn't work by a son to yarshin from his mother after he's already dead. So now the Rashbam points out over here actually that the word bakever by the husband doesn't mean that he's dead first. Actually, what it means is the other way around. It means when she's dead. It means, in other words, that he doesn't yarshin from her. So bakever over here means actually that it means that when she herself dies, then he's not yarshining from her at that point. When we talked about if she dies, she makes a bakever, is how the Rashbam phrases it, in other words. So when she's already dead, then he's not, that if we don't say at that point that he's yarshining her in such a way where then it would end up going to his sons from another wife. So in other words, bakever, the Rashbam points out, has two different meanings over here. When it comes to the wife, it means where the wife died before the husband. When it comes to the son, bakever, it means that the son died before the mother. So we learn from that. We learn from that Gzeira Shava that the son yarshins from his mother only if he's alive at the time when his mother dies. So the same thing over here with the husband, similar kind of thing. Means that if there's property that she didn't have when she was alive and she yarshined it only after she died, the husband is not getting that. So that's what it means. He's not yarshining his wife for kever. It means he's not yarshining property that she would have first acquired only after she dies. Tosfos actually earlier in the previous pedic discussed that and discussed various details in that and to a certain extent disagreed with the Rashbam on that understanding. But in any case, the point is that we're saying over here. So we see from that yes, son does not yarshin from his mother when he's already dead, when she's still alive. So that would be the answer over here. So Yosef does not end up yarshining after he's dead to bequeath it to his sons, but rather instead it ends up going to Rachel's other yarshin. So now the Gemara brings in over here at the end a case which actually came up earlier in the Masechta in Cheskas Abatin, all the way back on Daf Lamed, and Daf Chavtes Lamed, and the Gemara is bringing it over here. It's also a case involving a suffix of who gets Nechassim, but Tosfos wonders why we're bringing it over here twice in the same Masechta. Anyway, Hahud Amale Lechavre, there was a person who said to another person, Nichse de Bar Sisin Nizabnin Aloch, I'm selling you all the property that I bought from Bar Sisin. There was one piece of land over there. Davamikaya de Bar Sisin. People called it land from the family of Sisin. But the seller says, Ha lav de bay bar sisin he. This one actually does not come from the family of bar sisin. It just goes by that name, but it's not actually property that ever belonged to them, that I bought from them. And the other guy is saying, what are you talking about? It's called bay bar sisin. You obviously bought it from the guy, so I want it too. Also the kamei de Rav Nachman. So they came to Rav Nachman for a din torah, or it's libiyodi de lakeach. And Rav Nachman said that the Lakeah has the rights to it and it should be put in his possession. So Rav asked Rav Nachman, how could that be the din? Shouldn't you say he should have to bring a raya? And he doesn't have a solid raya. He wants to take it away, and he's saying because it's called the nechosim of Dvei Bar Sisin, that's not a reason. That's not a strong enough raya for him to actually take that property. So the Gemara points out. So the Gemara points out when we look at what Rava and Rav Nachman are saying over here, Kasha de Rava ad Rava or de Rav Nachman ad Rav Nachman. So there seem the Rami de Rava ad Rava de Rav Nachman ad Rav Nachman. We seem to have a contradiction between what Rava says over here and what he says in another case, and what Rav Nachman says here and what he says in another case. Da'ahuda amalei l'chavre, because we have another case which the Gemara also brings over there in the previous perek. Then in the earlier parak, Dahuda Omole Lachabre, my boys, Bahai Besa. Reuven comes to Shimon and says, what are you doing in this house? It's my house. Omole, and Shimon answers, Minoch Zvinte, I bought this house from you, Vaholos Shnei Chazaka, and I have already consumed it for the years of Chazaka. I've been already for 3 years in this house. Omole, so Reuven answers, you know why, you know why? I didn't protest all this time, even though in Perechezka Sabatim it talks about at great length how you have to make a machol during the 3 years. The reason is actually, so he says, I'm no b'shchunig gavoy havoy. So Reuven says, I was actually living in the inner chambers over here. So I was walking through the house all the time whenever you were living in this house, but I was constantly passing through. And you knew that I was here. So I wasn't moicha because basically I was giving you permission to live over here. But it's not that I said that you bought it and you have permanent rights to it. Also, the kamei de Rav Nachman. So they come to Rav Nachman Omalei, and he tells Shimon, Zil b'roi rachilosta. Go clarify your consumption of it, meaning bring a raya that you were there by yourself, and that Reuven was not in fact there in those inner rooms. Omalei Rava le Rav Nachman dinahol. He said, Rava asked Rav Nachman, is that the din? Hamotzi mechavel over raya. Here it's the other way around. The lekeach has the chazaka. Shimon has the chazaka because he has already been there. He's already been there for 3 years. So shouldn't Reuven have to bring the raya in order to take the property back? So kasha the rova ad rova, kasha the nachman ad nachman. So we seem to have a contradiction. Which one are they saying should be the one who keeps the property, the lekeach or the meicher? So the answer is the rova like kasha. There's no contradiction in rova. Hocha meicher koy benichsei, hocha hosam lekeach koy benichsei. Because in the case of Bar Sisin, the meicher is the one who's mochzek, because he's the one who owns this property all the time. He's the one. The other one is arguing that it's called Zvei Bar Sisin, and therefore I should have the right to it, but he doesn't have a chazak on it yet. So even if he brings Edim, he can bring Edim that's called Bar Sisin, that's not going to help him, that Ashbam points out earlier in this Masechta. It means he would have to bring a raya that in fact it was bought, from Bar Sisin. Without that, he doesn't have a raya. As opposed to over here, Shimon is the one who has the chazaka because he's been living there for 3 years. Did Rav Nachman add Rav Nachman like Kasha? Rav Nachman is not contradicting himself either. Hocha, because in this case of Bar Sisin, given to Omalei Dvei Bar Sisin, he's telling him, I'm selling you all the nechosim that I bought from Bar Sisin. Umikarya Dvei Bar Sisin, and this priest property is called land of Bar Sisin, so that itself, it shows pretty strongly that it's very likely that in fact he did. And that he's just trying to fudge things over here. Afaket says Rav Nachman, Aleji de Rami Lagaluye de lab de Bar Sisin. So Rav Nachman says, on the contrary, the Moicher would have to be the one who brings the raya that it was not in fact bought from Bar Sisin, and that it just has that name for no particular reason, and without that, it's not a valid claim. Hocha, as opposed to when it comes to the case where Reuven is saying, I was living in the inner chambers all these years and I was passing through, so then Faket, Rav Nachman would say, Lo yehe elo denoket shtara. Listen, what would happen if Shimon had an actual shtar? Right now, Shimon is claiming I have 3 years chazaka. And the reason why it works after 3 years without a shtar is because, as the Gemara had explained earlier, a person doesn't usually keep a shtar for more than 3 years. But let's say Shimon did have a shtar. Fine, that wouldn't be a solid proof either. After all, wouldn't we tell him, first you have to be your Mekayim Yashar, you have to show that the Shtar is valid and not forged and whatnot, and then you'll be able to keep the property. The same way over here, Rav Nachman can tell him, that you have to, you if you want to claim on the basis of chazaka, you have to show, you have to demonstrate that your chazaka is a strong chazaka. Namely, you have to demonstrate that Reuven was not actually living in those inner chambers all those years, and without that, you don't have a chazaka. So therefore, so again, Rava is being consistent because he's saying who is the muchzik right now. Rav Nachman is being consistent because you have to look at the actual claim and see is this a solid claim or not, and on that basis, then who has to bring the raya one way or the other. Hadron alach mishnas.